Well, thank you. Thank you, Bruce. Yes, I always, in Sydney, when people whinge to me about it being cold, I always think it's sort of subtropical. So, but it's a pleasure to be here today, and I think it's a very timely opportunity to speak to you all on innovation in the payment system. And it's timely because the bank has just recently issued a consultation paper regarding its innovation review. Why the need for an innovation review, you might ask? I think there are genuine and well-placed fears that despite what Bruce said, there have been some important and significant innovation in Australia over the recent decades and years. The Australian payment system, I think it's true to be said, may not be meeting the needs of end users in some respects, or it might risk lagging behind other countries over the course of the next 5 to 10 years. So an important goal of the review is to try and identify all of the various factors that may be inhibiting innovation in the Australian payments innovation as a way of thinking about, well, how can we enhance the environment for innovation. So my talk today is going to be fairly umbrella-like and cover quite a lot, and that's not getting to some of the specific issues Bruce touched on, but perhaps there'll be time to get to those in Q&A. I'll just start by saying, though, that I think I've got a number of key messages for you to take away today. I think the starting point is that we shouldn't start when looking at a topic like this by assuming we need some sort of regulatory intervention. If there is to be any regulatory intervention, it needs to be keenly justified. But I think it's also true that innovation can be very difficult in network industries such as the payment system, because it often requires different competitors to come together and cooperate in some way. And as I'll try and argue later in my remarks, there are good reasons why cooperation can be very difficult. And I think that's the thing that provides a motivation for some possible action on this front. But just to be very clear, we recognise at the bank that you can't regulate innovation into existence, and we're not in the job of going around and picking winners. So with that said, I think I'll just give you a quick rundown on where we're at. The Reserve Bank is 1 year into this innovation review. We've spent a year gathering informally ideas from a wide range of stakeholders. Last week, we issued a consultation paper, which is up on our website. That brings us to the formal stage of the consultation process, and it gives people something to aim at, to shoot at, if you like. We're looking for people to now give us written submissions, which we would normally post on our website, and those are due by the end of August. We'll follow that up with some face-to-face meetings. That's an option. We're thinking of having some targeted roundtable events. And then it would be nice if we could draw conclusions by the end of this year, but more than likely it'll be sometime early in 2012. And I'd like to just emphasise that, as Bruce suggested, our overall approach here is one that's very much a collaborative effort, talking with a wide range of stakeholders. I'm sure some of which are in this room, but many of which are not. So the consultation paper highlights, I think, the fact that governance is a key priority for the innovation review. I think the challenge here that's identified in the paper is to try and enhance the governance structure that exists at the moment, the governance structure, in a way that better supports innovation. To understand that more fully, I think it's worth distinguishing between two types of innovation. There's the first type that the sorts of people at this event are going to be most excited about, I suspect, which is the proprietary innovation, the stuff you can do within a company that you can have full control over, and the company itself can drive that innovation through. Then there's the more mundane, but arguably just as important, system-wide innovations. And those are the sorts of things that are aimed at improving connections, enhancing agreements, rules and standards, the sorts of things that really underpin the payment system. And those are critical, but the problem there is that the benefits of system-wide innovation accrue to all the stakeholders, not just the ones necessarily sort of driving the investment. And the experience, long experience, shows that it's quite hard to achieve sufficient cooperation. So in the rest of my talk, I'm going to sort of focus on why I think cooperation is kind of hard and what could we possibly do to improve that. But before I focus on that important issue of governance, I think it's just worth considering for a moment what are some of the key gaps that so far we've sort of identified through our discussions with the stakeholders, the key gaps that are already in the system or at risk of developing vis-a-vis other countries over the course of the next 5 to 10 years. I think it's important to do that because identifying those gaps will help us all set an agenda and determine some priorities. The paper highlights what I've sort of summarised many pages of our paper and many questions related to it, but the paper highlights three general types of gaps that I think could be filled. One that's very common is the desire, I think, by consumers to be able to have faster payments, and I'll come back to what I mean by faster payments in a minute. I think they're also looking in a number of different ways for more convenient payment options. Mobility is one obvious one that's kind of at the forefront of everybody's minds, but there are others as well. One of the keys is sort of the ability to address and send a payment more easily. Checks are very successful because you just need to know someone's name, and even then you can get it wrong, and then pretty much as long as you've got most of the address right, you can pop it in the mail or hand it to them and off they go. And usually that won't affect the quality of that experience. The other thing that's great about checks, for example, is that they help to include data when you send a check, a payment. You use the trusty old paperclip and you print out the invoice. You highlight in yellow, highlight a pen what it is you're paying for, and you pop that in the envelope. So those are the sorts of things I mean when I talk about convenience. Now, not every mode in every method, if you like, in the payment system needs to adopt these kind of things as goals, but it would be nice to have more options than we currently have out there. I think another thing that runs through in terms of the gaps are perhaps the potential to adopt more common message standards. Why is that important? I think that's the sort of thing that will help us to allow newer entrants to come into a system more seamlessly and to allow for new innovations in the future potentially. So let me just step back for a minute into governance. People, and in fact in a few minutes, the couple of minutes we had when coming in here, Chris Hamilton sort of mentioned plumbing. Plumbing's always evoked in the context of payment systems. I think that's fine, but it often really fails to capture the true issue here, which is the network aspects. Some analogies here, I think, that are useful are the telecommunications and transport industries. They're also network industries with a number of very similar features. So just like payments, they're about moving things. In the case of telecommunications and transport, it's people, it's messages, it's goods. In payments, of course, it's about moving value. Just like payments, there are many different modes within each industry, different costs of each mode, and they suit different needs. And there's an important role for private and public infrastructure, often to work together, and they're all underpinned by these rules and standards. Of course, why is governance a problem? Well, I think if you look back to the early days of railway in this country, the problem there was no one really thought about a lot of things. No one was tasked to come together and sit round a table and say, what are some of the key objectives? What are some of the strategies we should be thinking about? And so we end up with a situation where we had, for a very long time in Australia, three different gauges, and you had to change trains at the border. Very inconvenient. Thankfully, the telecommunications industry seemed to have learnt. They came along a bit later, and they learnt that lesson, and that's quite good because you don't have to, you know, from the early days, you just needed one device, one phone. to hook up to friends, family and businesses. One way to overcome governance problems, to avoid these sorts of hiccups, is just to have a monopoly provider. And people love to come to us over the past year and tell us about what a wonderful thing the M-Pesa system is in Kenya. It's a system which allows real-time mobile payment options. It's been widely used and adopted by a largely unbanked population in Kenya and now spreading around parts of the world. And it's very fast settlement because it occurs across the books of one institution. And that's why it works so successfully. But I think those of you who have lived through many monopolies in this country which are now subject to competition know that monopolies can be very inefficient in a lot of other respects, and particularly for innovation. So let me just step back for a minute to try and help think about governance problems and the importance of cooperation with a couple of examples. I think it's worth asking whether or not we could, in Australia, move to a situation where we have real-time or close to real-time payments. If you think about it today, if I want to give Bruce some money, and I want money to go to him today, I think we're lucky because it's a bit before 4:30, before we finish this, and I'm sure there's some options out there. Not that he could take money, but let's say we had some transaction to do of one sort or another. Well, what are our options? I could give Bruce some cash if I happen to have it, or I could zip off to a bank or an ATM and get it. If I had cash and Bruce had to jump on a plane before I could give it to him, I could go visit his branch if he'd left me with his account details, and I could make a deposit, which when he landed, he could potentially, if his bank's still open, go and get value from that. I could go to my internet banking site, and if we happened to be within the same institution, and it was the right institution, not all of them will do it, I could give him value today that he could get access to. Or I could go to my bank, and if I was sophisticated enough, I might know how to ask them for an RTGS payment, which is a very expensive way. They'll charge me a lot for it. And then I just have to hope for the best that Bruce's bank will process that and give him value in a timely way. So I think that emphasises, there is something missing here. The problem is not a lack of proprietary innovation. I think there are lots of different options, and people are thinking about, won't mobile phones be great if I can sort of embed some technology on there and deal with security problems and make it seamless? I can give people a sort of a method to make a payment and receive a payment while they're out and about on the go. Lots of options there. That's not the problem. The problem is guaranteeing timely throughput of the payments from one financial institution to another, and that requires cooperation. Similar issues when we come to think about allowing for richer data to be sent with payments. Direct entry is limited to 18 characters, and there are some ways to use that to send some richer data, but they're not widely used and they cost money. So again, you can't ensure that when one institution sends a payment with its preferred method of sending some data along with it, that it will be accepted in an efficient way at the other end. So why is cooperation so hard? Apologies, but the economist in me comes out at times like this, and I jump straight to externalities. And here I sort of can add in the network externalities. What's this? Well, an individual company, when making a decision about an innovation, whether to push something, to adopt something or do some research and development, they won't account for the benefits they will bring to others in the industry, users and providers, in expanding the size of the network. So they undervalue that network expansion. At the same time, if they're especially a large provider, they look at their own existing infrastructure and say, gosh, a new innovation, even by me, will devalue that infrastructure. Another thing which is sort of related to that is the need to generate some momentum, and that's related to the externality. If I am trying to make a decision as a company to adopt a particular innovation or do a big investment, then my decision there will depend on how many others in the industry have also agreed to sign up to it and do that. Early on, the cost of just going it alone is going to be very expensive, lots of risks. Later on, the costs move the other direction. I don't want to be left behind, because I might lose some existing customers if I'm offering broader banking services, for example. Synchronisation is something that we've been told a lot about in the course of our informal discussions over the past year. Particularly large players that have fingers in lots of pies, they need to juggle these competing demands for resources to undertake R&D. And if you happen to be out of sync with others in the industry on a particular project, you have an incentive perhaps to delay that innovation if you can. And others have raised, the final thing I think that's raised and mentioned in the paper is that competition laws, they could potentially be a deterrent to industry getting together behind closed doors to discuss a cooperative solution to a problem. So that's why it's so hard. That question's quite easy to answer. The really difficult one, I think, is to say, what can we do about it? And the consultation paper is looking for quite a bit of input on this difficult question, trying to understand some possible ways forward, useful features of any enhancement to a governance structure that would be able to support innovation. So my sense, this is my own personal sense, we're still a long way from determining this, is that there will obviously be an important role, I think, because of all of these problems, for external impetus. And that could well come from something like the Payment System Board and the Reserve Bank more generally. I think there will also be a very important role for APCA to continue to play. I'll leave it to Chris to address that to the extent that he's planning on doing that. But the problem is, how do we get broader representation? How do we worry about these new entrants and include them in the discussions that Bruce talked about? What about private customers? The problem with private customers, and I'm reminded, one of my staff dug this out, of a remark Henry Ford once made in thinking about innovation. If you just went up in his time and asked a customer who's not very well informed, what would you like to see in transport? They would have asked for just a faster horse. They don't know what to ask for. And so that's a bit of a problem. Customers that often do know quite a bit more are public. Why? Because they're very large and they sort of can see these small costs all adding up, and they're looking for innovative solutions to sort of help them be more productive. I think the system will need some sort of flexibility to just be able to deal with evolving issues. It'll need to have some longer-term strategic objectives. I think it's important to acknowledge, however, I'm not suggesting by any means that existing commercial interests need to be pushed aside. I think they're very important. They bring to the table a lot of expertise, and you need a system that sets up incentives for them and others to continue to innovate. The paper talks quite a bit more than I'm going to today about payment hubs and centralised structures. I think they're especially important in a system which is over-reliant on lots of complex bilateral arrangements, which can be very difficult to get up and move to a different place. So I'm going to largely finish there. I'll just make a few finishing remarks. There's our website. The paper's up there. I'd urge you, if you haven't already, to go and have a look at it. We welcome all submissions. There's the email address. They're due by end of August. Let me just recap then. I think in conclusion, we needed an innovation review given the evidence that there are a number of these gaps. I've talked about some. I think there may be others. And I think I've sort of made a reasonably compelling case why, at least in the sort of the difficulty in generating cooperation, which is critical to system-wide innovation, that sort of difficulty means that we're going to need to think about better ways to enhance governance. So I'll leave it there and hand the floor back to Bruce.
I made a comment, Chris, at a forum recently where you were there and as were others, that one of the challenges I see is that when you're dealing in an industry, there's really three ways to manage the industry. The industry participants can agree on stuff. And I think as long as they do that fairly and there isn't any competitive outcomes that are inappropriate, that's probably the best possible outcome. If that can't be achieved, one would hope that industry associations can play that role. And in our situation, I think APCA is a great example of that. So if in the payments business that we as an industry can't be seen to be moving forward in an effective and appropriate manner at the speed with which all parties, both public and private, believe is appropriate, it's always good for someone to sort of ride in on a white horse and say, well, I'll fix the problem, and it's a self-regulatory environment. I think that's probably, in many cases, the outcome that many of us in the industry would hope to try and achieve. And I suppose failing that, and it's probably the failing that is the right word, you then have to call on the umpire to come in and say, well, I'm sorry, you know, we've really tried to help you out and we've really given you some good guidance, and the discussion paper is a great example of that, but unfortunately you've not met our desires, and therefore we reluctantly have to intervene. And that, in some respects, really could be categorising what's happened today. And there's often, you know, a comment I think that, Chris, you raised in your earlier remarks, is that, you know, the RBA has often been said to be a reluctant regulator. And I think we accept that, and that's as a result of the industry and the industry associations at that time and the schemes themselves not effectively managing their business to the betterment of public and private policy. But you are a reluctant regulator. How difficult is it for you to back away from all of that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a bit newer to this area, so it wasn't me that said that, and I wouldn't use that expression.
You wouldn't?
I would probably say, look, we have a very clear mandate for efficiency, to enhance efficiency, to enhance competition where we can. That's done against the background of needing to be very consultative. You know, like I said, we can't regulate innovation and we can't be in the job of going around and picking winners. But I think we have to do what we have to do to sort of push industry when it needs it. It doesn't always need it, but I think there are some instances. And as you sort of talked about bringing industry around the table, the trouble is users aren't there. And industry should know their users, but it comes back to that quote from Henry Ford. The average user on the street doesn't know to go in their bank and say, I'd like a faster payment mechanism. Right? And they can't leave that financial institution and walk around the corner and get a better deal somewhere else. Because unless the financial institutions all agree, it can't be provided. But that's where I think it's very useful to listen to some of the big players. We've heard a lot from the superannuation industry. We've heard a lot from the public sector in one way or another, and other major users, including merchants as well. And at the moment, they don't have much of a seat at the table. So there is this question. I don't know that it's a matter of us pointing the way and finding the silver bullet, because I don't think there is any. But it may be a question of massaging, well, what's the right forum? Who should be at that forum? What are the rules? Who sets the agenda? Where are the priorities? What are the deadlines? Those are sort of the broad sort of things that I think are up for, we're looking for insights on.
And you see that primarily as the role of the Payment Systems Board? Or is it?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think, you know, as I mentioned, I think APCA, the likes of APCA, have an important role and lots of experience to bring. And they certainly, my sense is, attuned to this question of how representative are they of other users of new entrants and so on. But, you know, the Payment System Board has a clear mandate and it can't step back from that, and I don't think it has a desire to do that.
Given that this approach and the consultation paper is still a year away, thereabouts, and I guess the elephant in the room has not been mentioned as yet, and that's Mambo. Is Mambo timely? And if so, does it go as far as what you would expect it to go in achieving the gap, so to speak?
So I think it's a good question. I think it comes back to the point, I mean, as far as our response, the bank's response is, we're not in the business of picking winners. And it's not our job to make sort of essentially what are commercial decisions, to know the demand that's out there and to work out is that sufficient to cover the costs, which the industry needs to be expert on and make their own decisions. I guess what, as Chris pointed out, what's in the sort of the last part of the consultation paper is a discussion that the little we've heard about
the sorts of things it will purport to be able to do certainly will be helpful in filling some of the gaps. Will it fill all of them? No. Are there other ways to do it? Quite possibly. So I think that's probably how it's.
And kind of building on that thought then, in this environment that you have laid out in your paper and that you've talked to, Chris, how do you prevent innovation to innovate completely around the system that you're looking at? Because it's very easy, if you go back to your diagram of the current payment platform, where payers and payees could, through the internet, some scheme, PayPal to a certain extent, is that, start just trading between themselves, and now they've completely circumvented the whole regulatory and environment that you guys have laid out here. How do you envision keeping that under check or managing that? Or do you envision that?
There's no objective to try and tie everything down. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Certainly from the bank's perspective, what we're about is encouraging open, transparent competition, a level playing field. So good luck to these new innovations, these new providers who can come up with something that provides, meets their users' needs, and covers their costs of the investment, and provides a system, something that's sort of a good competitor with another system.
You look at it in the context of GFC,
yeah.
You know, the core issue, the core result was illiquidity in the system. So if you get to this environment where this value is being held and it suddenly goes illiquid, what do you do, or how do you envision?
Well, I mean, there is a point, I guess I should say, that the regulatory system does envisage new products like that emerging. Mm-hmm. And, purchase payment facilities, the prepaid type of model.
Yeah.
There are regulations around that exactly for the security perspective. I thought you were talking more about the competition sort of side of things. There is a concern that things, you know, the payment system operates in an efficient way, which includes a reliable and safe way. Mm. And if people put money in, they can have some, they can know with some certainty they'll be able to get it out. And different operators will fall under a regulatory mandate. If you do something sizable where you look and feel like you're taking a deposit and promising to pay value back out, that will fall under APRA's domain. Mm-hmm. So it won't get out from that regulatory mandate.